Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
It's no secret that cannabis has become a highly competitive industry. And the legalization of recreational cannabis that went into effect last year here in Rhode Island can open doors for your career. If you are already in the industry or wondering what is the best path to break into the cannabis field, the University of Rhode Island has a program to help you become highly competitive in numerous areas of the cannabis industry. Fully accredited by URI's College of Pharmacy, the certificate program is 100% online, and it can be completed in just 2 semesters. The next application deadline for the summer 2023 session is April 4th, and courses start on May 9th. Learn more at uri.edu/online/cannabis or give them a call at 401-874-5280. Welcoming back the one and only G. Wayne Miller. This time, you know, it's been a little bit since it was announced that you were leaving the Providence Journal, where you were for many, many years, and establish yourself as, you know, one of the premier writers in the market. And in general, you're also, of course, with Rhode Island PBS /SiriusXM and an author. We've talked about some of your work in that regard. But today we're discussing the launch of a new initiative that is affiliated with, I suppose, the Pell Center at Salvia Regina, and that is Ocean State Stories. So thanks for the time. And what's Ocean State Stories all about?
Well, thanks, Bill, for having me on again. Always enjoy speaking with you, whether it's on the podcast or in person, or, you know, we both covered COVID for so long. So Ocean State Stories has its genesis in conversations that Jim Lutis, he is the director of the Pell Center and co-host of Story in the Public Square, the Rhode Island and national PBS and SiriusXM show, began over a year ago. And we were both concerned with the fact that with smaller staffs, including at the Providence Journal, really industry-wide, the kinds of stories that I had done for many years that were, you know, socially relevant and important stories, quote-unquote important, but they were important, there was less opportunity to do them at the Providence Journal and elsewhere. Compounded by the fact that I had been covering the pandemic full-time from the start, actually before the start in Rhode Island, from January 2020 until I left, in November. And if you go on oceanstatestories.org, you'll see my 3-year recap just published today about that. Anyway, long story short, Jim and I brainstormed, what could we do? And we decided that we would create a media outlet based at the Pell Center. It would be nonprofit. It would be free. It would not have advertisements. And we would offer our content to print partners and others who wanted it. So biggest job in the early days was getting the financial support. And we were fortunate to get support from foundations and individuals that gave us a significant working budget. That all came together in the fall of last year. And the fall of last year was when Gannett, the parent company of the Providence Journal, was laying off people, not at the Journal at that time, but was laying off people, you know, chain-wide. And there was talk and there were rumors, and it turned out to be true, that there would be layoffs at the Providence Journal. Those came when David Ng, who was our executive editor, was laid off. I think he was laid off in December, and there were a couple of other people as well. So with all of that going on, and the funding having been secured, and having worked with, you know, the web folks down at Salvia Regina University, coming up with a prototypical site, conversations, endless conversations about the kinds of stories we would want to do, could do, I left in November and we launched Ocean State Stories on February 8th. And let me just give you a little bit about the site and what we do. As I said, we're nonprofit, we're free. I write some of the stories, but we are hiring a freelance corps of reporters. And actually, our first freelance piece on domestic and relationship violence will be published a week from today. And we've got four or five other stories in the works. You know, we pay our freelancers for their content anywhere from $250 to $400, depending on the issue, the time it takes to report and write. We are open to college students who are on a journalism track. In fact, two of the stories that I've commissioned are students down at the University of Rhode Island. The editor in chief and the news editor of the Good 5 Cent Cigar, which of course is one of the great student newspapers here in, excuse me, here in Rhode Island and really across the country. So that's all good. We have plans to grow. Another important feature, all of our content is published in Spanish and in English. So we have a translator who, a member of the Hispanic community here in Rhode Island, Susanna Torres, who does our translation. She's outstanding. And as I said, we have plans to grow and stories galore. I mean, there's like no end to the stories we could do. You know, and these are stories of, about mental health. They're stories about food insecurity. We've had stories already published in those two areas. Ageism. We want to do agriculture. We want to do and will do people living with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And if you go to oceanstatestories.org, you'll see our mission statement that can give you more detail. But these are the kinds of stories that, you know, have been dear to my heart for, you know, a long time. Like 4 decades at the Providence Journal. That is a long time.
That's a legacy right there. And
Well, thank you.
there's no question that, as you mentioned, that there's a change, there's a shift in Rhode Island media, and media in general. I mean, it's across the country, it's even on the national level, but staying here in Rhode Island, there's been a change for sure. You still have new things popping up over the last few years that have bolstered some of the traditional media here. Whether that's the Globe or some of the expanded work at Rhode Island PBS, or you know, even some of the smaller local newspapers have kind of picked up some of the I don't want to say slack, but some of the things that used to the Providence Journal may have covered in the past, whether it's the Valley
Right.
Breeze or Newport This Week, whatever it is, Warwick Beacon. But those longer form, in-depth, critical issues, it does feel that there's a major lack in some of those stories that really help us to understand and get context for other more stories of news stories of the day. And when you lose that macro picture, it's a lot harder for anybody to consume and really piece together what's happening or the cause and effect of major issues like mental health, food insecurity, lack of access to healthcare, whatever it is.
I mean, you said it perfectly. That's exactly what is going on. And before I continue, I just want to give a shout out to my former colleagues at the Providence Journal. I don't know how many reporters are still there, but they're all doing great work, you know. So none of this is a knock on them or what they're doing. You know, I still read, obviously, I subscribe to the paper, I read it, and, you know, I congratulate my ex-colleagues on stories that they do. So having said that, if you look at the national picture, and again, this was part of the conversation that Jim and I, or conversations that Jim and I had going back over a year, there are a growing number of news deserts where there are no, where there's no local news, none, zero at all. Then you have growing numbers of ghost papers. Some of those are in the Gannett chain, where you have one or two or three people, maybe not even with an office to go to. They're working remotely. Against that backdrop, and I've only started using this word really only this week, and I'm going to write something about it for Ocean State Stories at the appropriate time. But there's a revolution going on in filling the gaps and the vacuums left by the growth of news deserts and ghost papers. We at Ocean State Stories applied for membership in Lions Publishing, its local online independent news. And we were accepted, which was really great news. And they have about 450 members all across the country who are doing sort of different versions of what we're doing at Ocean State Stories, you know, local journalism, basically. And as Jim Lutis has said repeatedly, when you lose solid local journalism, in addition to the people that we've talked about, the issues that we've talked about, what else do you lose? You lose a critical element of what you need for a democracy to function, which is the local voice, the local people looking at issues, looking at politics, looking at politicians, sometimes praising what is being done, more often, you know, looking at gaps in services and people who are suffering who don't need to suffer. And I could go on and on and on about that, but that's a critical element of what we're doing and what people, organizations like us around the country are doing. I want to give a shout out to Vermont Digger. I don't know if your listeners may be familiar with Vermont Digger or not, but they're the largest news organization now in the entire state of Vermont. And they started several years ago with a great idea by one individual who was seeing what was happening in the state of Vermont, which is what was happening across the country, as we mentioned. And from that very early start, you know, one person, two people, whatever, they have grown into the largest news organization in the state of Vermont. They've got a significant budget. They have a lot of people on staff, and they do an incredible job of covering the state of Vermont. And I mention them, A, because they're a great model, B, because one of their big supporters is Charlotte Metcalf of the Metcalf family that used to own the Providence Journal before it was sold to the Belo Corporation in Dallas, and then eventually to Gatehouse, and then to Gannett. I've known Charlotte for many, many, many years, really since the death of Michael. And she's a big supporter. She lives in Vermont, of Vermont Digger. She's also been a supporter of Ocean State Stories and Story in the Public Square. She put me in touch with the folks at Vermont Digger, and they were so helpful in helping us launch. And so there's this cooperative spirit in this new revolutionary world, as it were. That's great. It's just, so I'm excited. You probably can hear it in my, you can hear it in my, I'm excited to be doing this. Nothing I ever expected to be doing, obviously, as recently as, you know, a couple of years ago. But here we are, and anyway, I urge folks to check out OceanStateStories.org. One other feature that we have, and we have it weekly, is a Q&A. So we go to local people in Rhode Island who are leaders in whatever fields. We've had Phil Chan, of course, people will recognize Dr. Chan's name from the pandemic. We had the new head of Rhode Island Kids Count. She was our first Q&A. And this week we have two people, Maria Rivera, the mayor of Central Falls, and this relates to the pandemic because obviously that was ground zero, Central Falls,
definitely,
along with Pawtucket, Woonsocket, and Providence, and Tara Granahan, who of course is the great morning talk show host. So she participated, and she talks about, you know, how she got to where she is, what she does on her show, and how she's an advocate for many issues, including, you know, homeless people. It ties in too with 3 years of COVID, because she quoted somebody who wrote her at some point during the pandemic, thanking her for the help and guidance that she had provided. So anyway, that's us.
It's really interesting you mentioned that revolution concept, because I would tend to agree with that. And as a news consumer and as somebody who is both and began completely independently, you know, literally, you know, working side hustles just to start up this podcast and the surrounding platforms that go with it, but has now entered into public media and into corporate media through WPRO, for lack of a better term. But one thing that's interesting right now is, you know, that at one point, be it the Providence Phoenix, the Village Voice, the new paper, the so-called independent media was framed at simultaneously as the alternative press. you know, it was sort of the place you went to get something a little different, something cooler. There's a lot of arts coverage, things like this. And today, the independent media is sometimes, as you mentioned with Vermont Digger, or I would say even in Rhode Island, there are examples of this, is breaking stories or going further in depth in the quote unquote mainstream media. And there's a shift happening right now. And it's, again, not to the Providence Journal has some amazing work. I mean, I love, I'm not even going to start naming people because there's, I read it every day. It's essential and you want to see it grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just the three network television stations, the newspaper and sort of the marquee radio station anymore. And it's a matter of credibility that I think has shifted, where people get their news from all kinds of different places. And it's important to no longer think of independent press as some kind of like, all right, that's for the fringes. It's changed. Now that can drive the entire news narrative in a market or across the country if that outlet is the one that is doing the work on a particular story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, to mention Vermont Digger, probably, well, I can't say probably because I don't know the entire national scene as well as I possibly could, but they are certainly an example of having stepped up. Again, they cover the entire state of Vermont. And the Burlington Free Press, which is owned by Gannett, has become a ghost paper, essentially. So they've picked up that slack. Here in Rhode Island, there are a number of different outlets and organizations, including your own great work, that are picking up that slack too. And, you know, let's get back to that word revolution. I truly think it is. And what is really great too is some of these sites do have advertising, and that's fine. You need revenue. I mean, right? You got to have the revenue. But many foundations and individuals across this country, civic-minded people and organizations, philanthropists and private citizens, who realize that, you know, local journalism is essential to our life, and never more so than in this age of disinformation and misinformation and, you know, Russian bots, and we could go through that long list of things. You got to have it if you want to have a healthy democracy. And that is one of the cornerstones of Ocean State Stories. If you read our mission statement, you will see that. I forgot to mention who our print partners were. We have three at this point: the Warwick Beacon, the Cranston Herald, and the Johnston Sunrise. Those are all John Howell's publications. I know you know John, one of the great journalists, speaking of great journalism. And he carries, we offer all our content to him for his papers. He takes what he feels he wants or needs or has space for, and he doesn't take it all if he doesn't want them. So, and we're seeking to branch out and get more print partners, and also partner with other online outlets that belong to Lion. So again, we're growing, we're excited, and the freelance piece. You know, look, if you're a college student, and I mentioned, you know, the two folks down at URI, to get, you know, $300 or $400 for a story, A, the money is good, and B, you've got something on your resume, you know, right? Ocean State Stories, this actual credible thing. So that's always been an important part of my personal and professional philosophy. Once I reached a certain point in my career, because I had no journalism training, never even taken a course. I was hired after sending out a million resumes by somebody who took a chance on me at a newspaper, which is now gone, the North Adams Transcript. Of course it's gone. I've had this philosophy that mentoring younger people or people who are starting out is really important. And that's another thing that we're bringing to Ocean State Stories, is helping folks get started and, you know, nurturing, mentoring. From my experience, I can save them, you know, effort and avoid some pitfalls for them. And anyway, I'm enjoying that whole thing, the conversations I'm having with the folks that we're hiring to freelance for us. And if you want to freelance for us, go to oceanstatestories.org and you'll see a post where you can learn how you can do that and how to get in touch with us.
That's really cool. I mean, I think I agree with you completely that the pipeline for young journalists is we were even talking offline about the cost of college, especially master's degrees and things like that. And, you know, that is one pathway for training, and you should, you know, going to college and not taking journalism classes, or not saying when you're 18, all right, I want to be, you know, I want to write for the New York Times. What's my direct pathway? It's an area you can kind of fall into based on other skill sets. And that can include things like law, medicine, engineering. You know, if you gain expertise in a particular area, what a valuable resource to a community to have a journalist with an engineering background. So when you're looking at something like the Pell Bridge reconstruction project and you're asking questions of Director Alvidi, you're filled with all this, you know, practical information. So it's almost like journalism deserves a new generation of people who have a almost pivot that way based on what they're seeing. They feel that civic need. They feel that lack of you know, in-depth coverage of a particular area, and they already possess a specific set of skills that they can add to the entire practice of journalism.
Yeah, no, exactly. And three of the folks I just commissioned to write stories are people, you know, they're not college students. They're well along in their careers, and their careers are not journalism per se, but they're really good writers, and they have so exactly what you're saying. So we're supporting those folks as well. You know, it's really, really cool that people are still interested in being journalists, whether you're in college or you're later in life. You know, there's still, you know, as much as some people might have denigrated some people, and I guess we know who we're talking about, denigrated journalists as enemies of the people, there's a real groundswell of continuing interest in becoming a journalist. And you know Mike Stanton, of course, who teaches at UConn. He was at the Journal for many, many years, Pulitzer Prize winner. We've had him on our show, Stirring the Public Square, and I'm in touch with him. And, you know, his classes are full. He still sees a lot of people who want to be journalists. Karen Bordalo, who's out in Arizona now, who was executive editor of the Providence Journal, first woman to be executive editor. She sees the same thing out there. So I'm encouraged by all this. I really am. And so, you know, it's easy to have a lot of gloom about a lot of things, and much of that gloom is warranted, but this is sort of a bright spot, certainly for me and our folks down at the Pell Center, you know, Jim and our support staff and the web people down at Salve.
There was a bill that came up in the news last week, and I talked about it on WPRO when I was hosting in the afternoon, and it already seems like it's going to be shot down. It came out of Florida, and basically the bill was a Republican senator that said anybody who's going to write about the governor or any member of the cabinet in Florida, any member of the state's legislature, needs to register with the state, or they would face significant fines for every day and every subsequent publication that they made. So as if to say, but the people who were excluded from this were the television news and the sort of standardized existing press. And, you know, obviously that's basically unconstitutional, if not entirely unconstitutional. But I wonder if there's influences out there in the big advertising world that look at an Ocean State Stories, that look at a Vermont Digger and say, we need to squash this because it's taking eyeballs away from the product that we sell trucks and mattresses on. What's your sense of that in terms of moving forward? Do you think that the independent press is at risk of sort of the same corporate interests that are gutting traditional media also simultaneously trying to squash or say, oh, they're not credible, it's not the same as what the product that we deliver to you with the bombastic, you know, the music and the lights and the sort of tone that comes with some of that corporate media?
Wow, Bill, that's an intriguing question. I don't have an answer to that. It's something that now is on my radar, and I'll pay attention. I think there certainly are corporations who would do exactly what you said, because corporations exist to make money. in addition to sell products to enrich their shareholders. I will tell you that it's whatever happens in that regard, it's not going to affect what we're doing at all, because again, we're relying on the support of philanthropists and individuals, and of course Salve Regina University, you know, and Kelly Armstrong, the president of Salve, loves what we're doing. The trustees, they had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and when Jim announced that, you know, Ocean State Stories had launched, it got a standing ovation. So folks like us and Vermont Digger and, you know, the New Bedford Light, this yep. right across the border there, I'm sure you're familiar with them. Oh, yeah. They're doing the same thing. We're not going to be deterred, you know. It's like, I can't use the word that I want to use, but, you know, good luck to you. Fine.
Yeah.
We're not playing that game. We're playing a different game, and it starts with the First Amendment.
That may be the slogan right there for all of independent media. We're playing a different game, and it starts with the First Amendment. G. Wayne Miller, Ocean State Stories are up and running, and certainly excited about this. I'm personally really psyched about it, and I know a lot of people are, and the buzz is starting to be there, and I can't wait till it gets to a point where, you know, and you in fact, you in some ways already are, but where you're driving the news of the day, and you know, it's you're cited everywhere else as this story came from Ocean State Stories, and you're the lead on that, and it just kind of grows it to that much broader audience. And that when that happens, it's on. No, it already is, but that's when the random person who doesn't necessarily even think of themselves as a news consumer, that's when they start to go to your site to start to check it for information.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. I can tell you that our weekly and daily analytics show a continued growth. We're reaching a large and growing audience. So all signs are good. And thank you for having me on. Keep up your own great journalism and work. Phenomenal.
I appreciate that a lot.
Thanks again, Bill.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.